Welcome to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I'm your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team. My hope is to shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. Creating meaningful change in schools often encounters roadblocks, with common misconceptions being among the most challenging. So today we're tackling one of those misconceptions, or myths, as I like to call them, surrounding the Positive Behavioral Interventions and Supports Framework, which is PBIS for those that are familiar. And so joining me to shed light on this topic, or as I like to call it, busting the education myth, is Trudy Bender, who is a school psychologist and our senior manager of thought leadership here at Branching Minds and one of my favorite guests. Welcome back, Trudy.
Thank you so much. It's fun to be here.
Well, and I know you're very familiar with PBIS, and so I thought you were such a great person to chat about this with. So first, let's define PBIS so that people know exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, so PBIS stands for Positive Behavioral Interventions and Supports. And really, PBIS is the application of the MTSS, or Multi-Tiered Systems of Support Framework, to behavior. So if you think way back, we had RTI, we were really thinking about how do we make sure that every student is getting the academic support that they need to accomplish success. And then we think about that same framework, but apply it to behavior. And MTSS is really supposed to encompass both of those things, the academic side and the behavioral side. So PBIS is really not something separate from MTSS. It's simply the application of that same idea of offering good universal behavioral support to all students, and then offering some strategic or targeted supports for students who need a little bit more to be successful, and then intensive behavioral support for students who have big behavioral challenges. So it's the application of that idea to behavior.
Well, that's a great definition. And I think it's easy to get this confused with a lot of other things that maybe schools do. Or maybe there's some schools that say they're doing a PBIS, but it's really something else. So we're going to kind of talk about some of those things. So first of all, what do you think that the myth that PBIS means no consequences comes from?
Well, it has positive in the title, right? Positive Behavioral Interventions and Supports. And so I think just from the way that it's named, people tend to focus in on the most visible application of PBIS in many schools, which is the idea of a point system, a sticker system, some kind of, you know, bucks or dollars or ways that students can earn prizes for their good behavior. PBIS is fine. It's well known. If you're in this world, you should know what it means. But I actually really prefer multi-tiered systems of support for behavior, like MTSSB, because that really encompasses this whole idea that this is more than just giving stickers to kids who are doing the right thing. And to be honest, in many circumstances, when schools try to implement PBIS, they don't take the time to really think about how this interplays with their code of conduct and their disciplinary consequences. And so they focus in entirely on the positive rewards aspect of PBIS, and they neglect the consequence part of it. Or it can also be that teachers are being asked to provide lots and lots of positive reinforcement. And many times, we've all been there. I've been a teacher, so have you, Larissa, where we're like, we have a kid who's misbehaving and we feel like the front office isn't doing anything, that they give them a sucker and send them back to class, you know, so it can really overlap with this distrust that teachers have with their administrators that there aren't actually meaningful consequences when a student is doing something wrong. And PBS can kind of play into that when teachers are being pressured to not report things that are happening in their classroom, to provide tons and tons of positive reinforcement, even when it's not warranted. So I think my guess is that's where that myth comes from.
Yeah. Well, and I think that oftentimes there's that sense of layering the PBIS on top of the, you know, the bad behavior consequences framework, you know, idea, mm-hmm. and not really trying to integrate all of that stuff together. Like you talked about, the tiered supports, and really what does that look like? And so, you know, let's kind of dig into how do you think within the PBIS framework, how do you define consequences, and how is that maybe different than like traditional discipline?
Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be different from traditional discipline. I mean, behavior has consequences. I don't think we do our students any service at all if we let them think that bad behavior is something that doesn't have a result. You know, we want our children to know that they are actors and that they are their agents. When they do something, it matters. Whether they do something good or they do something bad, it matters and it has an impact on the world. And we want them to know about cause and effect. Like we want them to have consequences. So PBIS can sometimes come at consequences from really encouraging more natural consequences, which I think is really good, where you let children feel the pain of their own, of their own behavior in a more natural way. Having consequences that are directly related to what they did that was wrong. So a really common example would be a child who has a temper tantrum, they rip up the classroom or they rip up their work, and they then have to clean up. The consequences, you clean it up. Maybe you even do extra to kind of make amends for your teachers and your classmates for what happened. You have to redo the work. You have to restore the environment back to the way that it was before. That would be a more natural consequence, as opposed to removing the student from class, putting them in ISS. They never have to clean up the classroom. They never have to apologize. They never have to face their classmates for what they did. So those consequences can be necessary. Suspension, in-school suspension, out-of-school suspension, you know, all of those kinds of things. But many times they're not as effective because they are not related to the actual behavior and the child doesn't make the connection very well. What you're hoping for is that a consequence where the child feels it to the point where they're thinking, yeah, this is something I don't want to do again. And not just because it was inconvenient for me, but because it hurt the people around me that I care about and I have a relationship. You want them to connect their behavior to that consequence.
Yeah. I was just thinking, as you were talking, I was thinking, you know, how important it is to understand how their actions impact other people around them. And if they don't actually have a glimpse into that, or if they don't participate in making it right, often they don't understand the full extent of how their behavior impacted other people. It's important for those things to like make connection, because that removed, you know, you go to ISS or you're suspended, they're removed from all the aftermath. And I just feel like that doesn't always help them actually really understand why their behavior was bad in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes, I mean, I think we're going to talk a little bit about what makes a good consequence, but sometimes those consequences directly reinforce the bad behavior and make it more likely to be caused again. So for example, this happens all the time. Kids are not showing up for school or they're skipping school, so they're suspended from school. Like, this is not a good consequence. It would be a great consequence for kids who love school and who want to be there and who care about it a lot, or who understand that this schooling is necessary for their eventual future success. But a lot of the kids who are skipping school and not showing up for class and everything, they have not yet made that connection. So, you know, removing them from school when they didn't want to be there in the first place is not going to be a very effective deterrent. So you're looking for consequences that will actually make the change. You also need consequences that keep other students and your teachers safe. So I want to acknowledge that as well. Like, I'm not saying at all that a student who's been physically aggressive or verbally aggressive should be put right back into the classroom and the teacher should act like nothing's happened and moved on. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying, take a look at what the consequence is for that behavior and make sure that it actually addresses what happened and makes it more likely that the student will want to do the right thing in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was going to be my next question, is to provide some examples of meaningful consequences. Do you have any besides the being skipping school and being suspended?
Yeah. I mean, as I said, there are certainly circumstances where kids need to experience ISS or OSS. And for some students, it's actually very effective. They never want to have that again. They lose privileges. They lose the ability to like be in the extracurriculars that they care about, you know, things like that. But for students who are already disconnected from school, they don't feel like school cares about them, they don't want to be there in the first place, removing them from the school environment without doing anything to actually build that connection actually makes the problem worse. We know that that's true. Like, students who are, they're in OSS, and especially if there's like not active work taking place during that out of school suspension to bring that student back in and try to repair the harm that occurred, then you're likely to have the situation occur over and over again. And that kid's going to be a dropout risk because they have not made a connection at school. So I'll give you a couple of examples of meaningful consequences that I absolutely have loved. One is that I had a behavior specialist who was working with a group of boys that were doing a lot of misbehavior. And their consequence was that instead of some of the privileges that their class had, they had to spend time actually improving the school, doing work with him. He did it with them, cleaning up the school grounds. They did a lot of work on the playground, and some of their misbehavior had happened on the playground. They were misusing some of the materials on the playground. And so they did a lot of, and it was like heavy duty work that he was out there doing with the kids. And as a result of that, these kids, not only did their behavior improve, they felt connected with this behavior specialist. They asked if they could keep doing the work because they really enjoyed spending time with him. I mean, that's what you want, right? Like it's the old thing of like in some schools, cleaning the erasers is a reward, and other schools, cleaning erasers is a punishment. Like it just depended where you were, you know, back in the days when cleaning erasers was a thing. It's because of that idea of building a connection with someone and feeling like you're making a meaningful contribution. And so these students, first of all, started policing the playground themselves, stopped throwing the wood chips. We just were very careful about getting all those wood chips where they needed to be, and also had developed a relationship with that behavior specialist to the point where they wanted to do things that would make him happy, right? They did not want to be the kids who were causing him pain. And so that's a really great consequence that actually turned into a bit of a reward for good behavior. So I love that example of giving students an opportunity to make it truly right and make a positive contribution to their school. In working with students with really big challenging behaviors, one of the steps that we take in doing good intervention with them is going to their teachers and saying, what does it look like for you for this kid to make it right? So they cuss you out in front of the class, or they destroy your materials, or they run out of class without asking for permission and you have to, you know, call for help and, you know, look or whatever. What would restitution look like? Like, what would that look like for you? So right now I'm talking outside the disciplinary consequences that a school might have. What would it look like for this student to make that right for you? And for some teachers, they would say, I want a verbal apology. That's what would make it right for you. I want the student to say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for what I did. I recognize that what I did was wrong and it was, you know, hard for you and you had to deal with all of this. For some, they're like, I would like a written note. For some, they said, I just want, you know, a handshake or, you know, some kind of acknowledgement when they come back into the classroom, something to make that right. And I found that even when normal disciplinary consequences, like the kid was put in ISS for a day or two or whatever the normal, or detention, whatever that was, that having to take that extra step of actually facing what they did and make amends for it really did make a difference. For some teachers too, it would be, I want them to spend a half an hour on their lunch break cleaning up my classroom. You know, my classroom, the tables need to be wiped down, you know, whatever that might be. And for me, you know, when I was a teacher, if I had a student, it didn't happen too often, but when I put a student in detention, I had work for them to do for me. And I stayed in that room and it was painful for everybody, including their parents who had to come and pick them up after school and everybody, but it often didn't happen again. For one, we had a good chance to talk. I had a connection with that student. I had a chance to talk to their parents. So even the way that we do traditional consequences like detention or in-school suspension or any of those things, there are ways to do that that make it more likely that the student will do the right thing in the future instead of the opposite.
Yeah. I think it's really important to acknowledge all the players within the behavior, right? You know, because it's not just enough for the student to serve their consequence, but really to like kind of restore the broken trust or the kind of broken relationship that might happen with a teacher or another student or whatever that is. You know, I appreciate the restorative practices in that manner, really trying to have them own up to how their behavior impacted the other people around them. So I like all of those are really great ideas, and I'm sure our listeners appreciate those.
Well, I mean, restorative gets thrown right in with PBIS as meaning that there's no consequence. It should be the absolute opposite of that. There should absolutely be consequences, but they should be meaningful consequences that actually do something to repair whatever was done to the person who was the victim of what they did. And actually having to face that is way harder than just putting the kid out for a day or two, to actually have to sit with the person that you did wrong to and look them in the eye and realize what you did. And to have it, you need a framework for that too. Like you usually can't do that cold if you've never had that kind of a conversation or you've never seen it modeled. But I mean, that's social emotional learning in the real world. Like those are the real skills you need. The ability to recognize when you've done something wrong and apologize for it, or to have somebody else who's hurt you look at you in the eye and apologize, and you being knowing how to respond to that, knowing how to move forward for that. Like, that's social emotional learning in the real world, and in a way that's going to take you forward into being a successful adult, being able to, you know, sustain a relationship, to be a good parent, to be a good citizen and a good employee, like all of those things. We really are doing our students a disservice if we, first of all, don't apply consequences when they're needed, and then we apply consequences that don't actually result in any kind of repair.
Yeah. Okay, so this kind of leads me to this next question. How do you believe that educators can balance that accountability and empathy within the PBIS system? So is this kind of, this relates to consequences, I guess, in the way, but how do you feel like we can help leaders even sort of lead that charge in their schools?
Well, I don't really see those things as being opposed to each other. I think very often it's a change that I've seen in the last 20-30 years that we've really moved from this idea where consequences are good and healthy for children to understand how to move forward. And maybe that was overdone. And sometimes children were punished without ever being given, you know, any kind of positive reinforcement. And we thought we could just punish them and they would do the right thing and not ever actually teach them the skills that they needed. To the other side of the spectrum where we like, all we need is a little bit of positive reinforcement and empathy and kids are just going to do great. We know that that's not true. Kids are going to get into mischief. They're going to test the boundaries all of the time. And good boundaries and consequences make for happier children. They really do. If you've been a teacher, you know that it's that teacher who has great classroom management, who absolutely carries through on consequences, is where you feel safe and like you can learn, because you know kids aren't going to be able to get away with treating you badly or treating the teacher badly and ruining your classroom. Like, you, those teachers are the ones who have total respect and adoration from their students because they recognize that accountability and kindness and empathy go right together. I mean, in some situations, you have to ask yourself, who are you being empathetic to? Are you being empathetic to the teacher who was assaulted in her classroom? Are you being empathetic to the student who can't learn anything because the environment is so disrupted by students who have not had consequences and where there isn't accountability? Like, that has to all be balanced together. And I don't think these things have to be opposed to each other. So yeah. strong classroom management, accountability, clear consequences that are fairly applied, and then building those relationships is good for all students and for all staff.
Yeah, you're right. It isn't one or the other. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's not about a balance, but it's about a mix of that, right? So, because I think we think it's teeter, you know, you either go towards accountability, towards empathy, but mixing that together. And, you know, I always believe that there's a lot of times we want to be really black and white about behavior, but you can't. And I think that any time that you think that you can be black and white about behavior, there's always other factors. And I think that that's sometimes what makes the job of, you know, the principal or the teacher even harder, because you know that a lot of times that students come into the classroom and they're behaving not because of just these external things, but other internal things as well. And so. Yeah. There's yeah. nothing that there's all, it's all gray.
I think too, like, I just want to recognize that teachers are professionals too. And behavior is hard to manage, but teachers are professionals, and also have to recognize that kids are, they're on their own journey. And so I've had to have conversations with teachers in which a student was, yes, misbehaving or, you know, dropping the F-bomb or whatever they were doing, and realized that the student was way better than they had been in the past. Like, they were on a path to getting better. And so giving some grace and some patience for students who are learning skills and don't have them perfected yet, but are trying and are on the way. And so, you know, there is always going to be a balance there of recognizing when is it going to be helpful for me to draw a line and a boundary and a consequence, or to recognize, hey, this kid is actually making progress and moving a little bit forward and recognizing that. And the reason PBIS is so important in the aspect of the positive reinforcement is that we naturally pay more attention to negative behavior than positive behavior. We all do. It's the reason that we need all of these stickers and charts and all of this other stuff is simply, it's a it's a cue for the adult to provide positive attention to kids who are doing the right thing, which we tend naturally not to do. If we naturally paid lots of attention to the kids who were doing well, we would not need any systems like that. But as adults, we tend to pay attention much more to the negative. How do I get this teacher's attention? Well, I've been sitting here doing my work for 2 hours and haven't gotten even so much as an eye glance. Let's find out what happens when I tip my desk over. I'm going to get a whole lot more attention. And so, like, balancing this with making sure that we're doing good relationship building and lots of positive reinforcement for kids who are doing the right thing, like that shift of attention really does make a big difference. And research shows us that it does. So consequences are important. They're a part of this entire spectrum of ways that we help shape behavior, but they're the weakest tool in the toolbox. The strongest tool in the toolbox is a good relationship with the student that's built on lots of positive reinforcement. That's the strongest tool in the toolbox. Yeah. When you can say to the kid, hey, look, this is me. You know I care about you, and I know you care about me. So what are we going to do to handle this situation better in the future? Like, that's the strongest way that we have of actually making a positive impact on behavior. Yeah.
And that is, I mean, that's a lot for, I think, for teachers. And I think so it's important to sort of reinforce, you know, how to do that and sort of build that capacity within your school. And it starts with the leaders, I believe. So in that sort of vein, what advice would you give to leaders who are hesitant about PBIS or hesitant about sort of implementing something as far as restorative practices or any of this stuff that we've talked about?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think seeing PBIS or restorative practices or anything like that as part of this larger intervention system is really important. It's not just a standalone. So having some kind of reward system for positive behavior in your school can be a good thing, but it's not a standalone solution. Like, it comes together with a whole host of other things in order to be effective. Having a good, clear code of conduct and disciplinary code is really important so that you make sure that consequences are fairly applied and that teachers know that they can trust that, you know, if a student is doing a behavior like this, that there's going to be a fair consequence for that. That's one small part of it. But really, the positive part of it is making sure that students understand very clearly, here's our expectations stated in positive terms. Here's what it means to be a student at our school. This is the exact behavior that we're looking for. And taking that, what we often call like a hidden curriculum, like all of those social norms and expectations, and bringing that out of the darkness up into the light and say, just directly, I'm going to teach you how to be a good student in my school. I'm going to teach you how to be a good student in my class, making sure that those expectations are really, really clear. And then making sure that we do have positive interventions. That is so much more than just a sticker chart. A positive intervention is going to be something like check in, check out, or even go earlier than that. Go in the early classroom, you know, level where your classroom management plan is good and solid, but you have a couple of kids who need more. They're always going to be there. You've got a couple kids who need a little bit more. And so you pull them to the side and you say at a non-disciplinary time, and you have a conversation about the problem. That's a positive behavioral intervention that often works. Or you tell the student, you know what, I'm just going to start collecting some data on this problem. I noticed that you're blurting out in class a lot. I'm just going to put a little tick here and let's see if we can bring those ticks down together. You know, you start to collect data. There are a lot of small interventions that teachers can start doing right at the beginning. And then as a campus and as a district, there are more systematic, targeted interventions that you can do, like a check-in, check-out system where you're connecting a student with a mentor and providing clear goals for the student where they're getting lots of increased structure, instruction, accountability, supervision, positive reinforcement, like bringing all of those things up. And so if you're hesitant to adopt PBIS, my guess is that you're thinking of it in this very small way of just a big point system or something like that, rather than a whole range of supports and interventions.
I think that that's really, really true, because I'm thinking back to my PBIS experiences. And honestly, the only thing that I really remember as a teacher was that it was about the little cash things we gave or rewards, and it was about parties. And I didn't really kind of understand that the other intervention part of it. And so, you know, I think that is a testament to leaders to making sure that we communicate what it really is, that it's more than just the rewards and parties, that it is about building that capacity or the building the intervention structure and building educator capacity. So
Yeah. Yeah. And I would add to that to just say, even within those reward systems, as I mentioned before, those are really just a cue to adults to be paying more attention to positive behavior. And they tend to get out of control fairly quickly. Like the economy on those tends to just run wild. But, you know, I mean, it's like Hogwarts, you know, 1 point for you, 50 points for you. Like, you're like, wait a second, what is this system? I don't understand. And so if I had a piece of advice to give on those kinds of point systems that we often think about with PBIS is to use them in a much more limited and defined way. Not all day, every day, in every circumstance, but to take a look at that economy and try to control it a little bit. Like some of the most successful ones that I've seen is where you take a look at your data and you decide, okay, where is it that we really need help? A lot of times in secondary schools, it's your hallways, right? Or maybe your cafeteria, something like that, a common area, and say, okay, we're going to implement some kind of reward system for the next month in the hallways. And we're going to give out tickets for, you know, the things that we love to see in the hallway. Do it for a limited amount of time, have some kind of reward system for it. And then the idea is that adults have now gotten used to being in the hallway, recognizing kids who are doing the right thing. You don't need this reward system going on and on and on. Or use it within a classroom for a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
It really does. It really can make a difference. And I love those. They're a lot of fun, but if it's just all day, every day, it can fall apart on you.
Yeah. Well, and I want to go back to something you said about collecting data. And I thought that this was a really good note. I mean, this is something simple that I think administrators can do even at the start of the upcoming school year, just to encourage teachers to take that initial data on some of the first kind of behaviors that they see in the classroom. And take notice of those. Because I think sometimes early on, we just diminish stuff really quickly and we don't sort of take note of it. And then it suddenly is really big behaviors because we haven't taken notice or taken data around the little stuff. And so I think that that can be an encouragement for leaders to just encourage their teachers to take notice of that and really document it and be aware of it so that you can intervene earlier rather than when it's too late.
That's such a good point. I think teachers sometimes don't realize that data itself is an intervention. Like making a student aware of how often they're doing something is in itself an intervention. Often kids are not aware. And so once you make them aware and you start putting, so it does multiple things for you. One, it can actually make a difference with the student themselves. Two, what's the first thing they're going to ask you when you go to your student assistant team meeting or whatever you call and you say, hey, I need help with this kid. Well, what have you done already? How often is it happening? If you don't have any of that, they're just going to send you back and make you collect data and do all of this. Why not just from the get-go decide, all right, I'm going to start tracking this. And maybe again, not all day, every day, what teacher can do that, but think, okay, where is it happening the most? Okay, it's happening the most from this period to this period. I'm just going to keep track of how often this is happening in this period. And on a larger scale for PBIS, if you want good adoption for multi-tiered systems of support for behavior in your school, share lots of data with your staff. Show them where the issues are. Show them the disciplinary data. Show them the data on how often students are being praised. What does it look like? What is our points program looking like? And share that data with them very frequently. It will really help with adoption.
Yeah. Well, Trudy, I'm sure we could talk about this all day long, but I appreciate you coming in to bust this myth about PBIS. And so, yeah, I hope this is helpful for our leaders out there. And until next time, thank you.
That's great. Thank you so much, Larissa.
Thanks for listening to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds. Go ahead and subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget, if you are enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcast on iTunes? This helps others find our podcasts and lets us know how much you love what we're creating. Branching Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchingminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn at Branching Minds.